welcome to the UCB Theater New York podcast episode. I don't know. I don't know what number it is. It really doesn't matter. Nothing matters.
Yeah.
Sitting across from me is Will Hines.
And sitting across from me is John Frusciante.
It's not really across. It's kind of next to.
Yeah.
Catty Corner?
Catty Corner, yeah. And our guest today is Fran Gillespie. Hello, Fran.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
I think it's Kitty Corner.
Kitty Corner?
Yeah.
Like Kitty Wants a Corner?
Yeah, like Kitty Wants a Corner.
The improv warm-up, Kitty Wants a Corner. John, I just want to say your intro was great this week. You did not blow out the mic or anything.
Oh, thank you.
Your volume levels
are great. To blow out
sometimes
the mic, yeah.
I mean, you take on the responsibility of introing the show, so I don't want to jump on you about it.
Well, the key is being a lifeless husk of a person.
Is that what it is? Really?
Yeah, yep.
Well, I don't think that's the only way to achieve that goal.
Yeah.
Got to announce the takes, show like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great job. Thank you. So Fran is our guest this week, and I just want to address publicly something that we were talking about off the air. Nobody prompted us to invite you onto the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
After
how did
last
it happen?
Week,
you invited Fran to be
Yeah, because after last week, I thought, like, that was really fun. We should actually do these every week like we're supposed to and like we promised each other we would.
Right. We had a long hiatus of not doing them out of mostly laziness.
How did you guys come up with the idea to start a podcast? Were you guys, was it like late night at McManus?
Not even. John, this is all
I had
John's
the idea, and I asked Anthony if I could start a UCB Theater podcast. And he said, yeah. And I thought, who better to co-host than Will Hines?
Wow.
That's right. Who better to make sure this remains an incredibly insidery meandering down memory lane of obtuse memories than Will Hines?
Yeah.
That's kind of, that's what it's been, right?
Right. That's exactly
that's, at least
what it's
that's
been.
That's what I've contributed.
Yep. So, Fran, you are, you're on the law firm.
That's right.
Which is the UCB Weekend Team Friday Nights
That's
law
right.
firm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You're on the mod team Stolen Cold Fox.
That's right.
You were formerly on Onassis, who
That's right.
won the Friars Club.
Also formerly on
Stone Cold Fox.
Stone Cold Fox, Slow Burn, and Gorilla Gorilla.
That's right. That's right. We did
five,
some time on Gorilla
five
Gorilla.
Five mod teams.
And what Herald teams have you been on?
And I have been on, my Herald teams were Tantrum, Bangs, Law Firm.
Nice.
Okay.
And you perform at ASCAT pretty on a pretty regular basis.
Yes, mm-hmm. pretty regularly.
Cool.
Okay, so I know that you're from Chicago.
Yes.
And I know that you're hilarious.
Okay.
Fill in the in-between. How did you get here?
Well, I don't think I lived in Chicago and then became hilarious.
I just made a direct correlation.
I don't think that was the timeline.
Oh.
I grew up in Chicago. And when I was 18, I moved to New York City to go to NYU. And I didn't have any friends. I moved to the city and I didn't know anybody that lived on the East Coast. I had been in New York one time before, but I didn't know anybody that lived in New York City or anything like that. And I didn't have any friends.
Ugh.
And yeah.
Scary city.
Yeah.
You don't know anybody.
Yeah. And I moved to, I was like, I don't want to go to the orientation for NYU. I just want to go the day classes start.
Okay.
So I missed all the time where you would make friends.
And isn't it like, I didn't go to NYU, but isn't it like a college where it's sort of hard to meet people anyway?
Yeah, because
like,
everybody
compared to other colleges?
Lives in New York City. It's like 70% in state. Mm-hmm. So people go home on the weekends and people already have their friends.
Yeah.
And so.
So why did you want to go?
When I was in high school, I just wanted a change.
Mm-hmm.
I lived on the Northwestern campus.
Okay.
And my parents were both professors there, and one of my brothers went there. And a lot of my friends stayed in the Chicagoland area. And I think when I was 17 applying for college, I was just oh, fuck it. I'm going to go on an adventure.
Yeah.
Which I immediately regretted when I came to New York, and then I had no friends. So I called my mom crying. I'm like, I have no friends. This was such a mistake.
Hmm.
And she was like, just try out for something. She's like, try out for an activity or, do something where you're going to be forced to be with people.
Uh-huh.
So she told me she would pay for my bus tour around New York City that visited spots that TV shows filmed at. So I did that, and it was like an NYU-sponsored thing to meet people. But I sat with a 28-year-old nursing grad student, and I didn't make any friends that way. She lived at home and had three kids, so she wasn't a friend. So I still had no friends.
Wow.
Right.
And my mom was audition for something.
Mm-hmm.
Go do something. I'd always done theater in high school, but I So I found it. I saw a flyer for an a cappella group, and I
some alternate universe.
Yes, that's right. That became your thing. Yeah. So I auditioned for this a cappella group, and then I had callbacks. But instead of going to the callbacks for the a cappella group, I went to auditions for a little improv team called Camp Anawana Swim Team, and that was run by Dan Greger and and DC Pearson also made it, and it was like maybe my like eighth day being at NYU. So then I met DC there, and then and Dan Greger.
So this ends up with you. I just want to jump in. This can end up with you being on Hammercats.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which I'm interested in because Hammercats is, I mean, that they're still active at NYU, but like that generation of Hammercats was like big at the UCB theater.
Yeah.
Major influx of people. So I'm curious. This is leading up to that.
So Anawana became Danger Box, which became basically just Hammercats. People were, it was just, Hammercats was the sketch group, but Anawana, then Danger Box were the improv group, but it was just the same people.
Okay. So then, Danger Box is still going on,
they
too.
Still exist.
Yeah, yeah.
We just had an intern here who was on Danger Box.
So Danger Box might still exist, but then I joined Hammercats and only did Hammercats stuff. And that generation was, AJ was the director, AJ Morales was the director, it was Lou Perez, Greg Burke, Dan Greger, Doug Mann, DC Pearson, Dom Durkis, Donald Glover, and I.
Huge. Like all huge players of the UCB theater.
Yeah.
And wasn't Adam Pally sort of like an also ran who didn't make it on and was mad about it or something?
Well,
wasn't
Adam,
he like concurrent?
Well, Adam went to New School but was really good friends with Doug Mann. They were roommates.
Okay.
And so Adam was just like a Hammercat that wasn't in any shows. He was just like around for all the like parties and I think most rehearsals. But he wasn't on it, which made no sense because he was super funny, super talented. But I think there was a hard, fastened rule that it was like, no, this is for NYU. I didn't enforce that, but he was definitely around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you get to be on Hammercat. So.
Yeah.
What and that was an improv group or a sketch group or what was
Hammercats was a sketch group that had started the semester before I got to NYU, but then I was on the improv team with so many people that were on Hammercats that they were like, just join Hammercats.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So you're creating sketch shows with Hammercats? Like, how often do you create, did you guys create a show?
We did a show once a month at NYU, but when I joined, when I was 18, they were already, the wheels were turning about how we could make it a UCB show. So then...
Wow. Hmm. I remember when you guys showed up at the UCB, it was like, I don't remember when, because the year, was it 2002 or 3 or something?
It was 2003, 2004. It was like January of 2003.
Out of nowhere, there were just like a million NYU kids, like interning and working like crazy, all Hammercats. I think Dan Greger was the first guy I met.
Yeah.
But it was, but everybody was, it was soon after.
Yeah.
And then like was taking classes.
Mm-hmm.
And then that show, what was the first UCB show? Wasn't it like a Saturday night 7:30 show with, there was a Monopoly card? Was
Reading is for Dicks.
Yeah.
It was Reading is for Dicks, and it was in March of 2004. We had, oh no, sorry. We had the Spank in February of 2004, and we were up at Skidmore together, the Skidmore, like the
comedy festival.
So all of us were up there, and some people stayed behind to do Dirtiest Sketch Show. And we won Dirtiest Sketch Show and then also found out that we got a run at UCB, like that same week. And we were like, this is it. We made it. We won Dirtiest Sketch Show.
Yeah. Do you remember what the sketch was?
Yeah. It was a dude who was a douchebag who was actually a douchebag. And it was a friend of ours, Matt Sadowitz. He had all this, I think, split pea with ham soup in his mouth. And he kept throwing it up, and he was like dressed in a white sheet, and he kept throwing up split pea with ham soup because he was an actual douchebag. Does that make
sense? It makes
Dirtiest Sketch Show.
Actually, we did Dirtiest Sketch Show a bunch of times. I don't know why. I personally was not a fan of doing the show because I thought I had seen women do things that I just did not like seeing.
Yeah.
And as the only girl in Hammercats, I'm like, no, let's not do Dirty Sketch Show. Because I just feared that I would agree to do something and then come off looking like I had seen other women come off.
Yeah,
but right.
I do remember a particular, oh, I'm already down the rabbit hole. I do remember a particular Dirtiest Sketch Show where we were rehearsing at Tisch at NYU, and DC had to pull his actual dick out.
Yeah.
And the boys told him he had too many pubes, so he cut his pubes, but he accidentally cut his ball sack. And I had a cousin visiting me who was 16 years old, and he was cutting his pubes in the room with my cousin. And he's like, oh, shit, I cut my ball sack. And his ball sack was bleeding.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But it was amazing. It was definitely a really so lame. Just like a really cool time in my life that I never appreciated when it was going on.
You guys schooled everybody from my perspective, because like there was an existing, you know, whoever was on Harold Knight at that time and whoever was the existing performers, you guys were just kids. You were like out of nowhere. A lot of you were interns, I feel like.
Yeah, I was an intern. A lot of us interned to take classes. And at the time, Eli was in charge of that system.
Okay.
And he was
Eli Newell.
Eli Newell. And he was amazing to us. He provided, well, because we were all broke and we were in college. And this was before there was like, you can only intern for two classes. So I interned for 8 classes. And if I hadn't had the internship, I wouldn't have been able to take classes. And I know the same is for like Dan Greger, Donald. I know DC was an intern, and it allowed us to take classes because none of us had the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We ate free. We basically survived on Chipotle because DC got to his dorm like a week before the dorms were open. He was just staying there, and he went to get mail at like 3 in the morning one night, and there were a stack of Chipotle cards that were for a free burrito. They were meant to be distributed 1 per mailbox because he was there at like 3 in the morning. Clearly, the person hadn't gotten around to distribute them.
Yeah.
He took them all. We survived on Chipotle for a year.
Wow.
got free burritos, but DC would always tip. Always, because he was getting free burritos.
Mm-hmm.
The St. Mark's Chipotle.
He's a golden-hearted man.
Yeah.
he was bartender up until, like, forever. Like,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Up until he moved, I feel
mm-hmm.
like.
Yeah.
Even after Mystery Team was filmed out, he was still bartending.
It's yeah.
Sort of crazy.
Yeah, but he's just a hard-working guy.
And yeah. I think all of Hammercats is. I think what I came to appreciate was when I say you guys schooled us, like, Hammercats was more pro than anybody. Like, at that time, people would get on Harold Knight, I think, and rest easy. They would just, like, not everybody. This isn't true of everybody. Maybe just me. No, but I think it was like a mentality of resting on their laurels. It was, but then like Hammercats did everything 100%. Like your flyers are always funny. The sketch show ran for a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everybody was doing sketches in Hammercats and outside of Hammercats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, it was like a pedigree of like professionalism. Like you guys were like, oh no, we're going to do this for real. Like we're going to get to UCB Theater and we're going to go beyond.
Because when we first came to UCB, I don't think people liked us. I think that, and then I think we were kind of like aware that at least,
I think that's true.
I think people didn't like us. It was like young kids rolling in, have a sketch show.
Like, who are you guys? Yeah.
Why the fuck are there so many NYU people around?
Right.
It's annoying. People didn't like it. And I think that all of us were like, well, let's just do hard work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I think it was won over pretty quickly. Like, Owen Burke was a fan of you guys. And like you say, Eli took care of you guys.
Yeah.
I feel like it was more, I think it was less annoying and just sort of like bewilderment. Like, who are these like millions of, and it seemed, millions of NYU kids around all of a sudden. But then you guys were like doing everything. I feel like everybody from that generation is doing amazing. And like, they always like work their ass off. I feel like you see like Greg and Lou videos all over the place.
Yeah, definitely. People from that Hammercats, I think everybody's doing really well.
They do everything like super professionally. Like,
yeah.
They just are soldiers.
I have like 3 friends from college because I think 6 nights a week I was doing Hammercats stuff.
Yeah.
And because it was just like, we got to meet, we got to do this, we got to do this. We had 2 Christmas shows, 2 sketch shows. We're like always making videos. It was like probably the most productive time in my life, which I don't think any of the other people could say. But it was just like constantly doing stuff. And it was great. I just kind of was like, I guess this is, you know, this is how this works. And, you know.
Yeah, it's a great period in your life to have that kind of a work ethic instilled.
I still don't have it. Like, I still have never been that productive.
It's actually insanely depressing for me to think about, because I was in college taking a full class load, doing homework, and then meeting with Hammercats like 5 hours a night. It was just like constant.
Yeah. I can identify with that, because I had a similar experience being in college and being in a very dedicated, hardworking comedy group that is like pushing ourselves and pushing the boundaries and like transitioning from short form to long form and making the audience come with us, you know, and like that was a very productive time, and now I'm like, well, I'm not that fucking productive
I know.
In my life right now.
I'm like, oh, I do the same amount of work except no college.
Right. Yeah. And so now you're in the UCB community. You're starting to get. Now, are you improvising at this point, or
only with Hammercats? I started taking classes in October of 2004, but I was doing like, you know, independent shows with Hammercats. Jackie Clark was my level one teacher.
Did you take it? Was that over the Malibu Diner?
Yes.
I feel like she always taught Saturday at noon.
Yes, that's when I took it.
Yeah, I was in the other room. I was starting to teach at that time, and Jackie was like the best 101 teacher. I mean, she was one of the best teachers, period. But she was like...
Yeah, she was great. She told me something that I always think about, and I have a really bad memory. Mm-hmm. Yay for improv. But I like can't remember anything that happened when I was on stage once I walk off. Mm-hmm. But... And it's hard to remember for me to remember things that happen in classes. But one of the first things Jackie said was, "You should improvise like you've drank two beers," and it really stuck with me, because it was like, yeah, when you have two beers, you're just like kind of loose and like
fuck it. Yeah.
What does it matter?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
I'm gonna say it. Oop, came out wrong. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know, on to the next thing.
Right.
And that's what she said in my level one class that stuck with me.
I do like the people in Jackie's classes were always like really good about like being free and loose. Good classes. Like I always remember being jealous of her like 101 grad shows. They were generally like really solid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was a great teacher.
Yeah.
So you took level one with her. And how long before you started? Did you get involved in any kind of like practice group community or anything like that?
No,
or?
It was always Hammercats. Uh-huh. Hammercats was so time consuming that I was never in a practice group. Mm-hmm. Never anything like that, which now I'm like so jealous of, because I see these indie groups or these practice groups that become indie teams, and I'm like, it's just really cool. I like that culture and environment of,
but
like,
there wasn't a scene then. There wasn't like a regular there wasn't like a regular whatever circuit of people doing shows.
Right.
I don't think like people would go to Variety Underground at Parkside Lounge and do a set. Maybe.
Yeah.
Or you would do, was School Night even around? I feel like that maybe was new or something. There wasn't like a ton of places for indie shows to do things.
Yeah, and the Under St. Mark's stuff started in like, well, I feel like Rogue Elephant made that popular in like 2005 or 6.
Mm-hmm. I think it was 5, yeah. I think that's
but
right.
But before that, there just wasn't a big scene for indie groups. But I see it now and I think,
it's a super
awesome.
Cool thing,
It's so cool to like meet somebody in classes and then just, you know, decide like I like the way this person plays, and I don't know, it's just cool to me.
Yeah. How did you get good at improv? Do you remember like moments either in Hammercats or after that were like important to you in terms of like feeling more comfortable or getting better at it, or was it such a blur that you have no memory and you just went into NYU and now you're here and you don't remember?
How did I get good at improv? I was always around comedy. And whether I liked it or not, like, I think in college I was even like, oh, man, like, I'm really kind of dedicating myself to this and, you know, closing off other doors. But I think whether I liked it or not, I was always around comedy, talking about comedy with comedy people. And then so I took a lot of classes and I don't know, just felt confident because I had like stage time at UCB through Hammercat sketch shows. Like I kind of didn't really have stage fright, or I wasn't.
Yeah, I feel like you're known for being fearless. I feel like you're somebody who is not nervous on stage and like doesn't ever seem nervous, and like tough shows, tough crowds don't faze you, I feel like.
Because I think that I've been in horrible shows. I've made moves more than hundreds of times that are met with just dead silence. Just like absolutely. I've been, and also going back to Hammercats, I really never talk about Hammercats as much, but I suppose I will today. It's like, look who was on Hammercats. The audience doesn't care to see me, you know what I mean? And I don't really like, and not in a way where I'm down on myself, but it's like, I don't.
The pressure's off or something?
The pressure's off. Right. Who cares?
Yeah.
It's like, look at that cast. No one's there because they like.
I don't know if that was true then. I mean, now you can look at, like, oh, Donald Glover's on TV. Right. You know, and like, Pally is doing this. And,
yeah.
Like,
but it just.
But
it,
like, at that time, it was just a. You were all good. I don't know if there was.
Gregor had larger, kind of more magnetic personalities that the audience was kind of drawn to.
Yeah, it was just like, it didn't matter. And now. It doesn't matter. Like, I make moves all the time that don't make sense and that in my mind, I'm like, I think this is a move that, you know, will forward the scene and it doesn't work. And I've said things where I think it's going to be the blackout to the show and it's been met with like, what?
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen and it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. I don't care if an audience doesn't laugh at something I do, and I think that in a way that has given me permission to just do whatever, because I have failed so many times and I know what it feels like and it doesn't matter. You know?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's not so much a toughness as it is just this confidence like to be able to navigate any kind of situation or navigate any kind of performer. Like, I'm gonna jump way far ahead,
yeah,
tangentially.
Do it.
Into, I saw your cage match last night. Uh-huh. I don't know when this will, who knows when this will come out.
But, Monday, I bet it will.
So then last Thursday, I mean, it would have been last Thursday anyway. What am I doing here?
You're
I
should doing, leave. You're doing a great job of navigating the weird
time
continuum.
So last Thursday, you did cage match and you came out by yourself and you said, can I have a volunteer from the audience who's never done improv before and always thought it would be fun to try?
Uh-huh.
And you got this woman who was actually pretty fucking great.
Yeah, she was great.
She was really great. She was terrified, but then she settled into it and was actually like...
And you're going up against Doppelganger, which is a great team and always does great shows.
Yeah.
And they're particularly good in cage match. They've had success in cage match.
So. And this woman like really settled into it after a while and was actually... keeping up with, or like
oh,
actually
she was so funny.
Making moves. But part of the success... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, I think it switched when I was driving a car. I was driving her in a car. She was in the passenger seat, and it was that we had just gotten into an accident. I had hit her car and was convincing her not to, make an insurance claim. And then it's, like, silent for a while, and she goes, please keep your eyes on the road. And then it was, like, she, like, totally got it after that.
Yeah, it was really fascinating to watch. And I think part of what was so successful about it is your confidence to know, like, you will be able to handle this situation no matter what this woman throws at you.
Yeah, I suppose. But the other side is, like, what does it matter if I can't? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sure. It's like, if cage match last night didn't work out, it was, like, silent, boring, I didn't come up with a lot, she, you know, the whoever I chose didn't. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like we, as actors or as whatever we're doing, we face rejection a million times more than we're going to face success and just be fine in that.
Yeah, that's true.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I'm going to now wrench back into the past. So what was the next chapter after Hammercats, comedy-wise, for you, Fran?
Like, I made a Harold team.
That's Tantrum.
And that was Tantrum in... April of 2006.
Okay.
I made a Harold team, and everybody got pretty busy. Hammercats, we had done a ton of shows, and everybody got busy. People were on Harold teams. Derek was kind of branching off.
Was Dom, DC, and Donald, obviously.
Yeah, and Dan Ekman.
Right.
Dan Ekman, I should mention, was heavily involved in Hammercats. Great, amazing. He directed all our videos. He was, like, the backbone. He was really great. And he branched off with Derek. And people were just kind of doing their own thing. Greg and Lou were doing their own thing. Doug and Gregor and Pally were kind of their own entity. And I made a Harold team. And I don't know. It kind of felt like a transitional period.
Right.
So I made a Harold team. and got really into that.
Now let's do the thing that we always do, and this is a disaster every time we do it, John. Who was on Tantrum at that time? And the curse of the podcast is we will leave somebody out.
So it was you, it was Jeffrey Marks.
That's
was
right.
On Tantrum.
That's right.
Chelsea Foss. Clark.
That's right.
Was Brian Foss on that
That's
team?
Right.
Brian Foss. Was Sean on the team at that time?
He was not originally.
Greg Tukulescu was, because he got right. moved to Fwand almost immediately.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Clemens took his place, maybe?
Trisha. And then Violet.
Oh.
Oh, Violet.
And then later, David Siegel and Ben Schwartz.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we got everybody. Great.
I'm sure we left somebody out. We left out Birch Harms. We always leave out Birch Harms, even if he wasn't on the team. Okay, so Tantrum. So what was that? What was it like? What was it like being on a Herald team?
It was great. I think it was great. I loved it. It was pretty nerve-wracking. Oh, this is good. This is good podcast fodder. When Anthony called me to tell me I got on a Herald team, I was really nervous, and Anthony called me. Oh, God. And he was like, oh, I wanted to ask you if you would like to join a Herald team. And I was like, are you kidding? And he's like, no. Would you like to join? And I was like, yes. And then I just kept repeating, I'm going to work so hard for you. About a fucking Herald team.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to work so hard for you. I'm going to work so hard for you. But I do put myself back in the mindset, and like 300, 400 people auditioned. It was a big deal to make a team.
At that point, that's the brass ring. Like, and when you get that brass ring, you're super fucking excited. Mm-hmm. You should be. You should allow yourself to be excited for stuff like that.
And then I just kept repeating, I'm going to work so hard for you.
Sounds weird.
Yeah, it was so weird.
Yeah.
In my cinder block walled dorm room, jumping up and down, saying, I'm going to work so hard for you. So that's that.
So Tantrum, you were on Tantrum for how long?
2.5 years.
Okay.
It's a while.
Yeah.
A long time.
That's a good run for a team.
Let's see. It's a long time for a team to be together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I
Why
mean.
Why do you qualify it like that?
Because I think there's a difference between a good run for a team and a team that's together for a long time. Yeah. It was a great team, but it was together a long time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
I feel like Tantrum was one of those teams that was always solid and for some reason never transcended to like premier status.
That's right.
And it was like good. It was good show.
Uh-huh.
But it for some reason didn't catch whatever, like the attention that Fwand did or something.
Yeah, but it's frustrating because then every time there's a changeup and you're held together, it's like this expectation like we're going to get to the next level.
Yeah.
And when you don't get there, it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, with teams where it's like we should be... And everyone has all the confidence in us to keep us together that we should be getting better at this and then, or like having more solid shows or surprising people. And when it doesn't happen, I think it can be frustrating. And then I think that's when, you know, there's like, I don't know, there's just kind of like that attitude that everybody can recognize but nobody talks about on the team where it's like, man, why isn't it this like,
right.
Getting there?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's a question that a lot of teams ask. And there's no answer for it.
Yeah.
It's just some weird thing of chemistry or time or it's just
improv. Yeah, that's the thing that lives in the weird metaphysical atmosphere of improvisation where, like, you just can't control those kinds of factors.
Yeah.
And Tantrum was also good. We don't mean to... I remember Tantrum always being, like, a solid team.
Yeah, they were a very good team.
But it is one of those teams where it was like, we weren't quite Fwand, but we were kept together for a reason, and it's very frustrating to, like, not break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Then you were moved to Bangs. Right, was the next team?
Tantrum was broken up, and then Bangs was the next team I was on, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I remember that team was formed the same time the fucking Kennedys were formed.
Yes!
It was an all-guy team.
Yes!
The first all-guy team since Monkey Dick, probably.
Yeah.
And then Bangs had 5 girls, 3 guys. That's and that was right. The first time, for forever, it was always like, oh, Herald teams are 6 guys, 2 girls.
Uh-huh.
That had no longer been true for a while, but... That was an old school template of gender breakdown on a team. And now here's Bangs with 5 women and 3 guys.
Uh-huh.
And what was that lineup? I'm going to risk the curse twice.
Oh, God, I don't know if
Let's see. Well, it was Mike Still,
yep.
Fran, Craig Rowan.
That's right.
Pat Bear. Uh-huh. Sean was he?
No, he wasn't. Bartels, was she in originally?
Yep.
Was she? Oh, yeah. Okay, so Bartels.
Trisha, Amber, Chelsea.
Replace Amber. Chelsea was on Fwand. Replace Amber with. Nope, it was Amber. I was going to say it was Violet.
Right, but Violet, I think, was somewhere
You're
else.
You're right. Amber Chell. Okay. Mike.
See, this is the curse of the podcast.
Mike Craig, yeah. Mike Craig, Pat, me, Amber, Trisha, Bartels. What is that at?
That's seven.
You sure it's not Chelsea? Wasn't she on the team and then moved to Fuan later?
No, she was
moved she was already on Fuan.
She was moved from Tantrum and I think Schwartz took her spot.
Oh, okay, right.
I don't remember the
Jeez, I don't remember either.
There we go.
See, that's it. Yeah. It's Birch Harms. That's the curse.
That's the Birch Harms factor.
Because that Banks changed a bunch too over it all this time. Like by the time it was over.
Yeah.
Banks was great though. I thought Banks was a great team.
Yeah, solid team.
Banks killed it, I think, a lot. And didn't he go in a cage match run or something? I don't remember. Banks was a hot team.
Yeah. It was good. We had our second show was an entirely musical Harold, and we hadn't talked about it before. It just became that.
Yeah, wow. Fun.
It was fun.
It's really fun.
And it just became that.
Did it become that in the opening, or did it become that out of the opening?
In the opening, there was music, and then the first scene started with music, and then, I don't know. I think that's why Banks had heat, because we did that.
Took a big risk.
I had heat, ew. disgusting. We're talking about improv.
I'm going to work so hard for you. I'm going to work
so hard for you. Yeah, so that was that team. I was only on that team for like 4 months.
Uh-huh.
And then I got moved to law firm with DC Pearson.
Were you on Bangs when they did the Robin Williams show? I don't remember.
Oh, no, that was the week I got moved off.
Really?
The week I get moved off, I go to see Bangs, my old team, support him. I come.
Oh, the and show Chelsea was started. On then.
Yeah.
Right?
Chelsea's the last person on Bangs.
I think so.
Yeah.
I remember she was in the Robin Williams show.
Okay, then she must have been.
Yeah.
Clemens took my spot on Bangs.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's why I remember him being on the team.
Yeah,
okay.
And he and it was the first show I was gone because I'd been moved like 5 days earlier. I was moved on a Friday, and that show was the Tuesday.
Hilarious.
And Robin Williams was there and did a show with them.
Yeah.
But actually, a couple months ago, Robin Williams came to Ascot.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was in that show.
Yes, you were.
Yeah.
You were hilarious in it.
Thank you. So were you.
Yeah, you were in that scene with Robin Williams.
You did the first scene with him, I think. You were in the first scene of that Robin Williams show, I'm pretty sure. I'm almost positive. I think he wasn't. I think you and somebody else went out after the Chris Kelly monologues.
I don't remember, but it was cool doing a show with him.
Yeah.
And then I felt like, okay, well, I got to do one. It didn't really bother me, the Bangs thing. It was just exciting that Robin Williams was at the theater. Yeah. And it was just one of those things where
it's funny that it's like
it
such a...
It didn't matter. Yeah, right, who cares?
Right. We've talked about this so much that it almost becomes a template question on the podcast. But
okay.
Tell us about going from Harold Knight to a weekend team, to getting to perform every week, to performing in front of a different kind of audience. What's that transition like?
Well, it's a way different audience. And I think law firm, for so long, really wanted to be a weekend team. And it was just like... We never really thought it was going to happen. And then in April of 2010, April of 2010, we became a weekend team. It had been like for that winter, so many people from law firm were going to LA because they like were having jobs and getting opportunities. And it had been just like not a lot of people around. And it was like, oh no, like we got to, you know, really have really kind of like... get more excited, like re-fall in love with law firm. And then people all came back and then we got a weekend show, which was great. And then, so the transition. Audiences laugh at way different things because we have shows Fridays at 10:30 and it's a lot of drunk people. And it's a lot of drunk young people.
Right.
And so they'll just laugh at like really goofy shit as opposed to like... a connection. Right. Harold Knight, and it's also like Harold Knight audiences really love the personalities they know.
Yeah.
And it will be like people will become a Harold Knight darling and then that person will do anything and the audience will just go crazy. And I think a lot of times Harold Knight audiences also reward when there's like a wink to them or like a wink at the fact that improv is going on.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Harold Knight audiences go fucking batty for that. And that's not great, but that does happen. And if you ever tried to do something like that on a weekend team, it would be like met with silence. No one's laughing at that. Yeah. They don't understand what the fuck you're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also, I find weekend night audiences don't really get connections. Yeah. Like,
they don't keep track of the show.
No, they're not keeping track of the show. They're living in it minute to minute. So a connection isn't going to have the same payoff on a weekend as it will for Herald Night, but it doesn't mean that you don't do them. I mean, to just create the world in a solid show.
Sure.
It still makes for good endings and sort of in a momentum at the end.
And just for the team to have connections, you like feel that energy and you like feel the excitement of a connection. So it's not like we don't have connections. It's just like the audience is not rewarding them with applause or...
Let me actually step back one step here that I missed.
Okay.
It's talking about Law Firm on Harold Night, before you guys got moved over to the weekend team. You guys were known as, like, you guys were kind of beloved on...
Definitely.
On
Law Firm killed it on Harold
Night. Yeah, yeah. Like, aggressive, fun, very physical. Like, shows that, like, you almost didn't care that you were on Harold Night. Like, you just...
Law Firm had a swagger.
Yeah, exactly.
Like there were teams like Bastion and Ragnarok that were excellent teams, but were sort of, like, well-behaved teams in terms of, like, doing textbook things. And Law Firm would, like, kick the doors open and have a blast.
And that's what I mean. I don't mean, like, don't give a fuck that you're on Harold Night. I mean, like, you're just out there having a good time with each other.
It was a lot... Stage. I love the people on Law Firm. And I actually... There have been so many different people on the team, and it's just, like... A bunch of just weird fuckos that like have fun together, and they're all really close friends. And
I remember some early scene on a Law Firm Harold Night where you were a kid in bed who was complaining that there was the boogeyman.
That's
I forget who your dad was. Maybe it was DC. I don't know who it was, but that person was like, "Oh, you'll be fine, honey. Just go to sleep," and left. And then Nate Lang went backstage and stayed backstage and just opened the door and, like, glared at you from, like, the shadowed recesses of the backstage. But you didn't turn around.
No, I knew it was going to be Lang.
You stayed looking ahead and just, like, looked scared and looked freaked out. And Lang just, like, was, like, punching his fist into his hand. Ominous. And then I think Gil ran to the lights and, like, turned the lights out.
Yeah.
So it was just a spotlight on you. Audience is exploding. I don't think another word, I don't remember another word being said in the scene. It was just sort of like, or maybe you eventually went, "Dad," or something, and then like that was the end of the scene.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was like super fun and silly and theatrical and good reading of each other's like stage picture. It was a really fun, and stuff like that would happen a lot for him all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think we just knew each other really well, and I also think that everybody has a different role on the team, and you, and I think that that's, I don't know, benefit that the team had.
Sure.
Like, I think everybody is there for a reason.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of personality, a lot of charisma, a lot of confidence.
Yep.
A lot of personal confidence, too, like just comfortable in their own space.
Yeah.
Which I think is what lets Law Firm... What let Law Firm go crazy on Harold Night was the people were like, "I got this. I'll be I'll be all right to just kind of be this for a while. I'm not worried about what the game is or where we are even in the Herald. This feels
definitely good." People are not worried about what the game is. Some people don't know where they are during that Law Firm show.
I remember coaching some Law Firm practice and had to stop a scene. I was just like, "What's going on? What's I literally do not know who anybody is in this scene, where it's taking place," and it's just like, "Oh, we're in a disco, but we're sharks, we're literal sharks, but this is a lawyer, he's a human who's a lawyer, and they sued each other, and I think this is, I don't, you know, I think this is a Harry Nilsson has entered the scene."
I had no idea what it was.
I was like, "Well, I don't know how to give notes on it." Makes sense, at least 5% in the scene or something.
It was definitely fun, and it was also like, people had been on Herald teams for so long at that point. It was, we used to call it Law Farm because everybody kept getting picked.
Right, Gavin and Pally were the founders who got moved to Ruru right away. Yeah. Oh, and then Gil.
Uh-huh.
And then did Dom and DC move?
Mm-hmm.
And
Tukulescu moved.
Tukulescu moved. Yeah, the team was constantly changing.
Law Farm. I sometimes called it the temp agency because people would be there like no time at all. And it was just like, every time a weekend team was picking someone, it would just come from the team.
Yeah, I remember noticing that too, and I knew that you guys wanted to... I mean, Law Firm was kind of put together...
In the tradition of, like, Respecto.
Yeah,
by people who wanted to be on weekend team. They wanted it to be a weekend team.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they were put on Harold Knight to kind of become that. And I remember seeing that happen and being like, oh, man, are these guys ever going to make it to a weekend team?
Just getting picked off. Yeah. But it was all worth it. I love doing the Friday night shows. They're really fun. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I like the audience, and I like that it's, like, you know, kind of drunk idiots. I kind of like that. But there's also, it's like, you know, really late at night. What should we do? We've been out all night. Let's go see a comedy show. And then it's really like, woo! It's just like totally different people that, like, I wish I was friends with, but I don't have enough free time to, like, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah. You've sort of been like a working comedian your whole adult life then. I mean, not necessarily paid, but in terms of like the way you spend your time is applying yourself to comedy projects.
Yes.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Mod Night, because you're on Mod Night too. So what, I always like to ask people, this is super fucking nerdy, but this is a super nerdy podcast.
Yeah, I don't know how you can apologize for that.
That's true. I always like to ask people on Mod Night, like, what their approach is to creating, like, bringing things around that are on the page to life. Like, what is your, I can't, it's such a weird convoluted
question. What do the actors do?
Yeah, like, what appeals to you when you read something? Like, what are the things that you kind of try to bring to Mod Night and bring to characters?
Ooh.
And also answer, how do you do it? How do you do it well? What are the secrets to being a good actor on sketch night? What makes a good sketch? What is comedy?
Should I talk about DC more?
let's go back about 5 steps.
What do you do when you get a script? I mean, I bet you for you there's, I mean, I can see you being someone who's like, oh, I just do it. It's just, I just get the script and I do it. But I want you to think about it more. Like, what do you, when you get a script, what's your process? Or are you just so busy that it's like, I've got 10 minutes to learn the lines?
No, not at all. Please, don't make me admit to that. sometimes it'll be like, well, my favorite mod sketches are things that have been from ideas I've had, brought to a writer's meeting, had kind of like created at the table at a writer's meeting, gone over what's funny about it, and then, you know, the next time we meet, I see, you know, like, yes, this is exactly what I thought was funny about the, you know, the pitch that I had. So that's the most rewarding. And then if I get a sketch that someone else wrote that I've never seen before, that I, like, have no background about, and I just get it handed to me, I kind of figure out, like, all right, what's funny about the sketch, just like I would in an improv scene. And then I'm kind of like, what can I do with the lines to that'll make whatever's funny about the sketch be the funniest? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, a lot of times, it's not me that's going to be the funniest thing about the sketch. You know what I mean? Right. It's not my lines. It's like, if I'm the straight man, me being like a character or like something that's very separate from, you know, from myself or a version of myself is not going to serve the scene.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing I decipher if I get a script. Like, okay, is this requiring me to be like a big character or like a majorly exaggerated part of me, or is it more close to myself? Is that going to serve the comedy the most? That's right. The first thing I do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was looking for.
Yeah. And then, getting it on its feet, I really like improvising, like, sketches, which sometimes can be tough because writers can be sensitive about that stuff. Like, if you improvise off of the sketch they wrote, they have written this sketch. They think that this is the way it should be. But the best is when a writer is like, yeah, let's play with some stuff. Nah, they don't like that, did like that, didn't like that, did like that.
Right.
So I like being on my feet, familiar with the script, and then kind of like going off on stuff.
So right now at the UCB Theater, you are on a weekend team, Friday Night Improv. You do ASCAT Sunday nights. Mm-hmm. You're on Mod Night with one of the premier teams, Stone Cold Fox, if not the premier team. That's subjective, I guess. But definitely one of the top, the most veteran team.
Yeah, for been around for a while.
Yeah.
Have a reputation and a style.
And you, like, do everything at this... You're the hardest working person at this theater.
Not true.
I think it might be true. You're definitely the most overextended in terms of, like, how many... Like, you're in everything we got.
You're working very hard, and you're in a lot of
things. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It is cool.
Yeah.
I am lucky.
Yeah.
I will also say I have been working at the theater since 2003-04, like we discussed. So
right. Oh, yeah. It's like, I'm not saying like it's undeserved. I think it's remarkable.
Yeah.
I feel like it might be not appreciated, I think. Like just how many...
How so?
Like I think I think Fran is everywhere.
Right.
And I didn't realize that.
So you don't appreciate
yes, that is
that's
what I'm saying.
You're
that
admitting
is correct.
To your own
that's
underappreciation.
Right. Yes, that is right.
It's okay.
Good. So we're going to broker a peace accord on this podcast.
I don't. Yeah, I just.
And you're a teacher.
And I'm a teacher. That's right.
Yes,
yes that's right.
And I tour a lot.
That's right.
That's right. You're on tour.
Yes. A lot.
Yeah.
Which I love doing.
Sure. Yeah, it's great.
Turco is.
So, are you
great.
Able to function outside of a comedy task activity? Like, if we dropped you in the middle of like Iowa and forced you to hang out with people for 2 hours that don't talk about comedy, would you have anything to say?
Oh God. Well, I went to NYU, like we discussed, and I have two friends from there. I had three, but lost one. She didn't die. She's just not a friend anymore. So I have two friends from NYU, and I'm one of five siblings and one of five kids in my family. And all of those people don't like talking about comedy.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
And so they're people I interact with on a very regular basis where none of this shit matters, and I can feel myself boring them when I'm talking about stuff that happens. No one comes to see me in shows. I don't ask them to. It doesn't matter. And I have that very separate part of my life that keeps me very sane. Mm. I live with two people that want nothing to do with comedy, and that keeps me, like, pretty sane. Like,
yeah.
In touch with what people outside of UCB
yeah.
talk about.
Right.
And I like that. But I do... occupy most of my time doing comedy-related stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think that's super cool.
Yeah, it's
awesome. Who are... this might be a hard question. Who have been, like, some of your favorite people or performers to watch in any comedy context? Like, at UCB or, I don't know, in the movies? Who are people that you love?
This is...
It's too big a question.
Boring, but Louis C.K.
Oh, yeah. Nothing boring about that.
Okay.
It's a great show.
Yeah, but it's probably a boring answer. I really like Louis C.K.
Yeah.
I like that show, Louis.
Like, I wonder if you ever get... you probably don't get time to watch a lot of shows, mm-hmm. like, because you're in a lot. Like, I know that that'll happen to people when they're able to get shows going. Like, you're sort of doing something that you don't get a chance to see as much necessarily.
Yeah, I don't watch... I don't have a TV... So I don't watch a ton, but I do have, like, set shows that I'll try and, like, find illegally online. I'll always, like...
FBI listens to this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Who do you perform with in ASCAT that's, like, a treat? I mean, everyone in ASCAT is great. But, like, people that you wouldn't get to in the law firm?
People that I don't perform with regularly?
Yeah. Who are some cool people you've gotten to do, like, a lot of improv with?
Well... Amy Poehler's been in town.
Yeah.
And I've done a couple ASCATs with her. Man, just the best.
Yeah.
I get, like, emotional thinking about how good she is. It's crazy. The thing about Amy what I take away is just, like, she's never asking permission. And I just would hope I would be the same way. Like, who cares if you don't like what I'm doing? Get on board or don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she just is never asking permission. And everything she does is just, like, insanely funny. So being on stage with her is kind of...
And then off stage, she's, like, nice to everybody.
Oh,
yeah.
She's, like, everybody's favorite
That's
person.
That's the worst. This is the worst. She's just so good.
Yeah.
So that has been the most exciting thing.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And, you know, she hasn't been around, or I hadn't seen her a lot in a few years, so it's, like, crazy now. She's, like, nominated for an Emmy, and she's doing these little teeny-weeny, you know, not like ASCAT's little, but she's just, like, the woman's probably going to win an Emmy, and she is spending her Sunday nights doing shows the past couple months. So that's been amazingly cool. And I love performing with Neil Casey. We... Yeah. Did a lot of tours together maybe like a year and a half ago, and I think that it made me like a better performer.
Yeah.
I think being on stage with him made me better.
I mean, yeah, he's one of the best performers here for sure. If not the best. Like, and he's another, like you, he's versatile. He was in a lot of like different projects here at the theater. He can play the straight man or the crazy person.
Yeah.
He's very good at adapting to what the scene needs.
I have never felt safer on stage with anybody.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So that's fun. He's not on Law Firm, so that's a person.
Yes, that's good. Those are two excellent examples.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Two examples of people. So that's fun.
What else you got, John?
I'm trying to think if there's anything else we haven't covered.
We talked about Cage Match?
Talked about Cage Match. I thought that Cage Match was great, quite frankly.
Oh, yeah.
I was really... I mean, it was amazing. Like, I found myself halfway into it thinking, like, has this woman really never done improv before?
Yeah, she is a Swedish woman who was taking landmark classes to be more comfortable speaking in public.
Okay.
And she came to the United States 4 years ago, but needs to keep going back because her visa hasn't been approved.
Okay.
I took her out to McManus. And she was there with a friend from her landmark class. It's like a Toastmasters thing.
Okay.
Where if you're scared to speak in public, you take this landmark class. So she was there with a friend from that class. And when I turned the other way, was looking at stage left, she raised her hand on stage right because she was giving herself like a personal challenge to raise her hand. And she was very surprised at what happened. She was like, you didn't tell me what was asked of me. I was so... And I was like, yeah, who cares? Stay on stage.
she was great. And the two of you put on a great show.
Like, yeah, I'm glad.
Yeah. It seemed like you just made her so comfortable because you were so comfortable with the situation, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, here's the question. Is she coming back with you next week, or are you doing the same thing?
Well, I don't know, actually. I'm in Cage Match on Thursday, but I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe I'll do the same thing with a different person, or maybe I'll do, I don't know, something that I think of. I don't know. Uh-huh. I don't know.
Okay.
Exciting. Well, I think this podcast will be up before that. I'm positive. So everyone should go check it out. That's going to be a great show.
Anything else you want to plug or mention or...
Just go see every show at the UCB Theater because Fran Gillespie will be in it.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming in, Fran.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was great. Really exciting.
This has been great.
Yeah. Thank you, Will.
Thank you, John. I've got nothing else. So come back next week, maybe.
It seems like we're on a roll here. It's not quite a pattern yet. There's only two. We've only done this 2 weeks in a row.
So come back next week and see if we hit the rule of threes and keep this thing going for 3 weeks in a row.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and thank you for listening, and thank you, Fran, for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And goodbye. Goodbye, John.
Bye, Will.
Goodbye, 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 goodbye.